I mean, nothing is more important to a brand than color consistency. So if your toner device is not printing great color that day and your 185 red is not 185, you've got a problem. And sometimes you can't wait for a tech to come out. So then you're learning to use spectrophotometers, you're learning to measure on the fly, you're learning to do different wizards to make sure your equipment is within calibration. So it's not super easy.
What's up, everyone? It's Eric Vessels with Tactiful. Welcome to another episode. Welcome back to Tactiful Tuesdays. Today we have a very special guest joining us. I think we always have a special guest, but I like to say, to make you feel special, someone with over four decades of hands-on experience in the printing industry. Ken Heisinger started his career as a sheet-fed pressman in the early 80s, spending 12 years mastering the craft before expanding his expertise into broader areas of print production. Ken has seen firsthand how the industry has evolved from traditional presses to cutting-edge digital technologies, and he brings a wealth of knowledge about quality control, production, efficiency, digital embellishments, and the future of print. Whether you're an industry veteran or just getting started, Ken's insights are sure to be invaluable. Ken, welcome to Tactiful Tuesdays. I'm super excited to have you, bud.
Wow, thanks for having me. And that sounds awesome. I'd like to meet that.
We try to make you feel, every guest feel special, right?
So I have to
give you a really good introduction.
You grind along over and over again, and you're like, oh, well, yeah, some of that is true.
So what you'll notice right away is Ken is a part of the Tactiful team. He's our technical consultant, and he is way better branded for this video than I am. I'm apparently representing the University of Kentucky basketball team today for some reason. I'm also moving, so that's why there's all this crap behind me. But eventually, you're going to just see the brick wall with a really cool preview tactical sign that lights up. Eventually, my studio is going to look really good.
You're appropriately dressed. It is March Madness time. We're both Wildcat fans.
Oh, let's go.
A little bit different on the Wildcats, but
it's a different Wildcat for sure.
We'll see it in the Sweet 16.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Ken, it's great to have you on. I'm really, I think I'm most excited to have folks on. I've interviewed several people that have participated in our last boot camp. And as many people know, we've sort of shifted and rebranded the Tactiful training to Tactical as its own brand. And that's the division that I'm running. And you were also involved in the Hatteras boot camp. But I've interviewed Daniel now, G. Rana Sinha, and just got done interviewing Matt. So I'm really excited to dig into some of the stuff that we covered in the boot camp within the podcast and get it a little more broadly exposed, because there was some really good stuff relative to production. But let's start at the beginning, and I would like for you to share with our viewers a little bit about your story. How did you first become interested in printing in the industry, and what drew you to become a pressman? Or was it accidental, like most people?
No, it wasn't accidental at all. I loved the big machinery. I knew I was going to be a tradesman. I knew there was just no way I was going to be dropping into a four-year college. First of all, the money was too good being a tradesperson. And second of all, I stumbled into a trade school that offered electronics, which is what I started to take. And then I saw this whole corridor of a school that had all this printing equipment, and I couldn't help myself. I'm like, what is that? That looks awesome. So, well, come on in. So after about, I don't know, 3-4 weeks of printing school and learning and testing and doing all the daily classwork, sort of took to the machinery right away. And it wasn't too long before the teacher was like, you know, I got to do a lot of printing for the district after hours, and you're smoking those machines. How about you run a few jobs for me? I'm like, okay, what does it pay? He says, well, what it pays is you don't have to pass a test, and you're not going to have to sit through classroom learning. And I'm like, whoa, this is awesome.
And so, it's the pressman version of teacher's pet. I love it.
It really was. And I got really lucky and had some great, great mentors to learn from. So, you know, there I was 15 years old, making very, very good money. And it was just like, I don't know if I want to go to school right now. I want to ride this cash as far as I can. So, I mean, that was 1983. And boy, the story's long, but I've always had my hand in this industry and have enjoyed it and I've enjoyed the challenges, and now it's sort of time to take all that I've learned and help others, which is what led into this, this marriage with Kevin and Tactful. And now with these boot camps, I mean, what a phenomenal opportunity to be able to share all that stuff that we've learned over the years and try and make things easier for end users and people that are taking a big risk on new equipment to do embellishings.
Yeah, it's interesting for me because I get to see kind of the larger picture, right? Like I get to see like your session and I get to see all the sessions because I'm facilitating them. So I'm seeing how all of this different information comes together. I mean, I say accidental, but it's really kind of fate, right? So it's just like, fate led you to, to take that path, and it's really gotten you to a place where now, like you said, you're delivering great value because of all the years of experience that you've had coming up. But that segues really good into my second question. And that is, over the course of your career, you've seen a lot of significant technological advancements. And I wanted to see if you could just talk a little bit about what you've witnessed relative to those technological advances in print production, and how have they impacted the trade and the industry at large?
That's a loaded question, but I'm going to have to say the biggest change was people wanting instant gratification. You used to be able to get an order in and plan on it being on an offset press and getting 2, 2.5 weeks lead time and producing massive quantities of product. And in the last 5 to 7 years, customers literally will call up one day and say, if my file's even halfway good, is there a possibility I could have this by the end of the day? And that was, I mean, things had gone digital, things had gone where the products were dry and could actually be worked on fairly quickly. But now you're talking about taking a workflow that was 2 weeks, making it 2 days. And you've got some antiquated equipment in your shop and you've got some new stuff. But when you go and you buy a press and you think you're going to cut a half a week off your lead time or, maybe even a week, you think that's progress. But now it's just not enough. What inkjet has done to our industry and what embellishment has done to our industry has upped the game huge. Not only do we have to have products in and out in one day, which hybrid inkjet has just been amazing for that, but then you have to embellish as well, because people want different, they want better, they want more. Having a toner device in your shop, this no longer makes you a full-fledged printer. You have to offer so much more, and you have to say yes, or they're going to go somewhere else. So fighting that speed curve and having the right technology in place as you move forward, you can't just think about what can I do now to help production. I got to think about what can I do now and what can I do even 90 days down the road. That's really hard to do due diligence on equipment and come out successful.
Like you said, you have to be able to say yes. But I mean, I'm listening to you as you describe that, and I'm wondering, did which came first, the demand for that quick turnaround or the capability to be able to do it? So was it a fact of like, we've got this equipment now that we can do short run and we can turn stuff around quicker, or was it the customer demanding it that drove you to find the technology to be able to do it? I think that's an interesting question. I'm not
That's
sure
a
I know.
great observation and a great question. And I think we kind of did it to ourselves. When you use an indigo or you use a toner-based device, you're suddenly talking about instantly dry product, right? So you're thinking you're going to fit it into that window, but then you start doing things for your good customers, and sometimes you're doing it in less than 24 hours, and you're like, hey, how far can I push this, right? So I think we, as an industry, we ended up doing it to ourselves. We said yes too many times, and now customer expectation is fantastic quality, 24 to 48 hours. Now the demand is even greater, right? I mean, sometimes now a one shift operation's becoming two because you're actually could be getting down to hours.
Yeah, and I think, one obvious thing from a customer demand standpoint is like once they get it, it's hard to dial that back, right? Like once you've set the bar here, it's hard to lower that bar. It just keeps going higher and higher. I did want to ask you one question because I'm super interested about your experience and about your history and about all the things that you've encountered. What were there any challenges that you faced early on in your career? And I'm wondering, like maybe, I don't know, don't have to be specific examples, but I'm always wondering how people overcame different challenges at different stages. Are there anything that sticks out to you that was a particular challenge that you had to overcome, maybe early on, or maybe it's relatively recent with all of the change that we're experiencing?
I think my generation was obviously built on loyalty, staying with a company, devoting your life and your career to a particular place. And that really got you far. It got you safety. It got you a solid job for your family. It helped you raise your kids. And it seems to change now, right? Because my kids are millennials, and boy, am I learning a lot of lessons from them. But as millennials would come into the shop as a leader, I would try and educate my staff. I wanted them to be better. When I saw them take an idea and take it a step further and do it their own way and come out with the same or better results, that I found super fun. Like the last 10 years, it was just amazing to watch people grab new technology, have them flourish, make themselves useful to the company and more valuable to the company. And they're getting better at the same time. That was really fun. Unfortunately, now I think there's a lot of push and pull in markets and in jobs, and printing is not super glamorous. So you're trying to figure out, how do you entice young people to stay, especially after you help educate them?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't have great ideas for that, but I think that's one of the reasons that I keep getting drawn into Tactiful, is because now I've got a place. You could take companies that are successful, maybe buy a new piece of equipment, and are looking to shorten that 12-month, hey, we're going to learn in 12 months, and then we're going to be successful with this technology. That's really expensive. So now I can take the things that I've learned and the knowledge I've gained and share it with companies that want it, right? They're looking for it now.
And absolutely.
So instead of forcing your way into an organization that might not want your help, it's great to be called and say, you know what, we got a weakness. We hear your organization is awesome. Can we pick and choose like where we need help and get an expert to help us? And man, that's just awesome. I've really enjoyed that. I've enjoyed what you've brought to Tactiful, and you're extracting even more out of us than I even thought we had. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, I think that one of the things, as I was listening to you talk about dealing with millennials and aging, as I am, and obviously I have three kids, two of which are well into their 20s now. The one thing that I've learned a lot about teaching is the reciprocal learning that happens, right? And I think it happens both in raising kids, and I think it can also happen in our careers. I mentor a college student now and talk about it quite a bit. Her name is Kendra. She's at Cal Poly, and we connected, and there's some mentorship going on there. But what I'm noticing now that I've done that for a little while with her, maybe a year or over a year, or going on 2 years, I guess now, is I'm learning from her. Like her perspective, right? So it's like you can know all this stuff and have 20, 30 years worth of experience, but the best teachers that I've seen are also really great learners. And it's a reciprocal back and forth thing. And that's what you're seeing in these workshops too. And I see it happening a lot. I saw it happen in your session of like listening to what people are experiencing, and you're kind of taking that in, and then you're able to put that in your toolkit and able to transfer that knowledge around. And that's what these boot camps are all about. And you're absolutely right. Like, we're trying to put these together to where in 8 to 12 weeks, you can progress an amount that might take you, you know, months or years on your own, absent these great subject matter experts like yourself that we bring in.
Yeah, the reciprocal thing, I really like the way you put that, because, you know, I worked with my daughter in the industry for a period of time. And, you know, we used to have this argument over direct mail, right? Well, she says, I don't even want to go to my mailbox anymore. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute now. You're going to pick up something cool and colorful and touchable and tactile, and you're going to take that coupon and you're going to use it because it's going to save you some money. And then we go back and forth. And as she asked me a few questions, well, why? Well, why do I need that? Why can't I just get it on my phone? And, you know, we go back and forth. We're probably the only family that sits at the dinner table and argues about whether or not how relevant print is.
But
I think we both prove our point, right? It's not for the things it was 10 years ago. But, you know, when you're getting bombarded every day with digital media and you don't even want to look at another email, and you're willing to walk out to your mailbox and you're like, oh, hey, this is cool. And, oh, wow, there's an offer I probably would have never gotten in my email. And I think that we both have kind of proven that as long as you're really careful about what you're printing, who your audience is and you're molding it to those audiences, I think it's super relevant. And, you know, as we've done at Tactiful, something that like a package, you know, I mean, I know you're going to be real shocked at this, but if you look at what's likely to happen when you have a cocktail at the end of the day, the Luxardos are full of foil. They're embellished with varnish. The bottle's absolutely beautiful. Higher end products, they're going to this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think
Prince relevance, there it is. I mean,
and I think
I worked for it. It was in my house.
When I think direct mail and the conversation you would have with your daughter, I mean, both things can be true, right? And I think that's where we're getting to as a printing industry is we're understanding, yeah, digital has taken away a lot of print volumes, right? But it hasn't made it irrelevant. There are different tools for different things. And when new technologies come out and they're disruptive, it kind of scares people. I think that's what we're doing that with AI now, right? Like, oh, AI is going to take everyone's jobs. No, not really, right? There's going to be a time when you're going to use AI. There's going to be a time when you use a digital offer in your marketing. There's going to be a time when you use a printed offer in your marketing. And sometimes, actually, direct mail, what I love about it is when people combine those to be basically the same campaign where the, like, a lot of times print drives people online, and I don't think people realize that enough, but I want to focus a little bit more on production. Great conversation. And as always, it's like, I just look down and like, we've gone like 16 minutes and it's insane.
That's my fault. I probably took you off topic.
No, it's me. No, we are. This is what Tactiful Tuesdays is all about, going off topic and exploring fun stuff and having fun. It's all good. I'm wanting to know from your perspective as someone who's done it for a really long time, what has the transition from traditional to digital printing methods affected in terms of the roles and skills required to be a press operator? Like, how has that shifted? And in my mind, and I could be wrong, it's like less bespoke and more technical, or is it more like what is required now to run the modern day printing equipment that may have not been required back in the day, or vice versa? What's not required that used to be?
Well, I think everybody kind of knows that when you run a big offset press, it's a bit of apprenticeship. You really have to learn a lot. There's, you know, there's rollers, there's inks, there's, you know, solutions and balance, and it's quite the craft. And you do still have to have an apprenticeship to get to that point and be a successful press operator. And I know that as digital equipment came along, it was like, well, we're going to make it easier and we're going to make it so you just have to push a button and then things will come out. And that's a great, it definitely did make it easier. It definitely made it so that you could go after a different type of operator. Somebody, you would never have put anybody that has pre-press experience on an offset press. It would have never worked. But you can take a pre-press operator and make them a digital press operator without a lot of work. And it's all great until problems creep up, right? I mean, HP has shared maintenance. They call it shared maintenance for a reason. They want you to learn to solve a lot of problems on your own. And when you bring in techs from for toner devices, it's best you pay attention there too, because they're not always going to be able to come in an hour's notice or a half an hour's notice. You're going to have to pick up some skills that make it easy for you to do some of the easier technical things. So I think you're still, in a sense today, balancing being digitally savvy, but also having to have some skills to do minor repairs, troubleshooting, color balancing. I mean, nothing is more important to a brand than color consistency. So if your toner device is not printing great color that day and your 185 red is not 185, you've got a problem. And sometimes you can't wait for a tech to come out. So then you're learning to use spectrophotometers. You're learning to measure on the fly. You're learning to do different wizards to make sure your equipment is within calibration. So it's not super easy. And if you're going to talk embellishment, if we're going to take it one step further, now you could be flood coating, you could be varnishing, you could be foiling, and you could be troubleshooting why one of those three things at one time is not working right. So there's still a decent amount operators have to know to be successful in the digital print world.
Yeah, and even if things are automated, I think it's, you know, the way I view it is like if something's automated and you've set up a process that it just works, you still have to know what to do when it doesn't. So you got to kind of revert back to that, oh, I got to do this by hand or that by hand to keep things going until it can get back to where it's automated and it's kind of working again. And I also had a really interesting conversation with Matt Redbear. It was obviously centered more around design, but he was making the argument of like, look, you really need as a designer to sort of understand how the process works, so that when you hand off all this beautiful work to that next process, which is printing, that it does, that it works, that it prints, right? So I think the more you can understand all of the different processes that are around you and what to do when things go wrong, it's never going to 100% be just about pressing buttons and about being automated. And just, when things happen, you've got to know how to get in there and just run it.
And to that point, there was a day, and I'm sure operators in pre-press will love this, but you could literally erect a wall that was impenetrable because neither one wanted to be in each other's domain. And now it's so important that you endear yourself to your pre-press guys and your file manipulators, because they can make your digital life so much easier by making sure that elements aren't impossible to achieve, that they've removed problems, that they've taken a look at the masks and be sure everything's correct before it proceeds. And when you have great files and you have a good relationship with pre-press, man, you're going to be able to spit out a lot more on the tail end, and you're going home on time instead of late. So it's become, I don't know, what's the right word? Symbiotic. You're working together a whole lot more than you used to. So the way we had these old school habits of hating each other or not wanting to get in each other's world, I'm glad that that's changing. Maybe it's the Gen Z, maybe it's the millennials that are taking a hold of that. But I notice a lot more of that generation can actually do minor file manipulation themselves. They're so computer savvy that they're able to help themselves in the digital realm. So that's also working well.
So I'm wondering, what's your outlook on the future of print in an increasing digital world? And embellishments, for that matter, are do you see embellishments as a way to, I don't want to say save print volumes, but add more interest in the printed thing, CMYK plus, you know, raised varnish, textured stuff, foil. Like, what's your feeling just overall on the next 10 years? Is a long time frame.
I think as long as you're willing to reinvest, you're going to be fine, because the markets are going to change. I mean, you look now at a shelf on any store and there's seven of the same item. I can almost guarantee you're picking up something that looks cool or something that catches your eye. And it wasn't that long ago, I was at a friend's house. He says, you got to try, I know you like IPAs, try this IPA. Well, tell me why you picked it. Oh, well, dude, look at that. Man, it's super cool.
All the IPAs have the wildest artwork.
Yeah, and as long as... And, you know, that to get to that point really takes an investment in equipment. So maybe don't overinvest, but invest in what you're hearing your customers need. I mean, it's never more important than to go to your best customers and say, where do you see your business going, right? You got to have that conversation. And then, you know, if you can buy a toner device and you're like, man, I don't know, getting those fifth and sixth color stations, that's a lot of money. You almost have to do it. That's the time. You got to make yours different than the six or seven shops you might compete with locally. And I think as long as you're doing that, the excitement level for print and the excitement level for those that do print is going to carry on. But if you think you're going to go back with your 30-year-old Komori or Heidelberg Press and maybe buy one toner device to keep people happy, I think those parts of the industry are going to be really hurting. You almost have to have an offset press, multiple digital presses, and now embellishment. Okay, maybe not today, but a year from now, you need to be heading in that direction, because it's going to be in super high demand.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so one more kind of just thought of one more shop type question. Then I got a couple fun questions. We always like to end up on kind of a fun note. You in your amazing session that we had as part of the boot camp, you really focus a lot on preventative maintenance and cleanliness and keep. And is that, were those like hard lessons learned for you? Is that where that focus comes from? Is that because it not doing that caused you problems over the years? Because I know it seemed like that was a real focus for you.
I think what caused it to be a focus for me is every time I called for technical support, the first thing technical support wanted to know is, when's the last time you changed your filters on your AC unit?
When's the last time you did this maintenance?
Well, show me with your phone what the top of the machine looks like as far as dust and contaminants. What are your temperatures like? What's the humidity like? And if you didn't have the right answer to those questions, they were already going like, well, what do you expect?
Yeah. And I'm sure, I mean,
I understand why, right?
Too, right? There's probably some CYA going on there, right? But I think what comes across in your session is that there's a genuine emphasis on these things being important to machines running correctly over longer periods of time, right? So it's not all CYA and trying to avoid coming out for the service call. A lot of it is hard lessons learned. Then that's one of the reasons that you're teaching people, hey, make sure this area is, you know, clean, or that area is clean.
And getting back to what I said, so when they would ask me those questions, it may turn out that there was an issue that was not related to anything that was cleanliness. But what it did make me do afterwards is go, you know, they're going to hold me accountable, and I better make sure that these things are correct. And honestly, looking back, you know, the cleaner I kept the machine, the better. You know, when you've got that many tiny, 1,072 orifices on just one inkjet head, and if any one of them clog, you've got defects that are just going to cost the company a ton.
For sure.
You know what? It's good advice, and it was good for me to go through that exercise. So yes, it's very important.
Absolutely. All right. So some fun stuff. Talk to me about, I don't know how many people know you, but, and I guess I didn't know this that well. I knew that you had a Gmail address that had the word racer in it. You raced cars?
Well, I mean, we all have had those days in my 80s. I did race at the local level of NASCAR stock car racing. It was such a great experience. I wish I could have done it.
Were you like a wrench guy? Did you like work on cars and stuff?
Like when I grew up, certainly I had to work on my own vehicle. I was a printer. I wasn't making tons of money.
Right.
Yeah, you learn, and I would actually go out and thought I would just help some of my friends, but every time I would get their car ready, get it balanced, get the stagger right, make it so that the car would go fast, I'd watch them go out and get the rush, and I'm just like, I can't watch them anymore. I gotta dive in myself. I did that till
oval track.
Yeah, it was at paved race oval. So
what kinds of speeds are we doing?
What kind of what?
How fast are you going?
Entering corners, almost 100.
And then straight away, 160?
A little bit more, yeah.
A little bit more, okay. So another question. So this is all...
I just want to add one thing. When I couldn't do that anymore and it wasn't cost effective, I then switched to cycling. So I was a cycling racer for a period of time. And I'm racing.
When you say cycling, are you pedaling it or has it got a motor?
Pedaling it.
Okay.
Imagine the Tour de France at a much lower. Okay.
And there's some fitness components to that. Like,
it was so fun. I mean, we had a great time. We had a great team. I missed that as well. But when COVID hit, that sort of kind of scared us all out of that. And we all got out of shape and we all got another 4 years older. So I had to give that up too. But I still like to go out on weekends and have a good time.
Well, it sounds to me like you're well adept at getting printing presses to run quickly and cars to run. You're into tuning things to go quickly.
Well, I think the weekends couldn't be completely down. Obviously, in the printing industry, there's tight deadlines, heavy turnover, jobs. You know, some days you'll have two jobs to work on, and some days you'll have 20. When you're doing that all week and you're under the fire like that, and the whole crew is under the fire, you can't just shut down on weekends. So I think you take a little bit of that adrenaline and pour it into something productive and fun. And that's where I ended up finding myself.
That's awesome. That's really good stuff. I'm always interested to like kind of get around the edges, you know, of like who a person is or what a person is. And I also know we've already kind of like spoiled we've leaked a little bit here on the, we're both huge whiskey fans, bourbon fans. I obviously grew up a stone's throw from the bourbon trail itself. What are you drinking nowadays? What you just had something.
Yeah, right, I just had one of my favorites, the Weller 107.
The Weller Antique 107. That's good stuff.
Anything in the Weller family.
That's good stuff. And we bonded over some Pappy Van Winkle one night.
We did, and I will never forget it. You had introduced me to my first taste of Pappy Van Winkle. So
and I've still
haven't mentioned it again. I appreciate it. I'll never forget it. It was awesome.
It's all good, man. I love introducing people to really good bourbon. Right now, I've got Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, which is one of my favorites. The Double Oaked is
Not another one that's super solid, so.
it's so complex and so complete. Do you have a glass handy?
I don't, but feel free
No.
to indulge.
Well, you, my friend, are unlucky because I have a glass handy, and I will toast to you, Ken Heisinger, for being on Tactful Tuesdays. Thank you, my friend. And it is, everybody, we're shooting this at like 6:30, so I'm not a complete degenerate. This is not during a work day or anything. Thanks for being on the podcast, my man. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it. Have a great time.
See you, bud.
But to your point, I always say when I'm working with print service providers, listen, we have tools and we, print provider promotional kits. We'll give you files that, so you can start to print some of these things and start to market your capabilities. But I always say, if I go on your website and I don't see that you have this available, how does anybody know?